This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In that kind of fantastical high I was in post-Oprah, I feel like it was so cinematic I had to be a perfect toe touch.
It was sheer adrenaline. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and what a week to welcome Bridger Weiniger to the podcast. He is a comedian and writer. You've seen his work on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Black Monday, and you've probably heard his Next Level Good podcast, I Said No Gifts, where his celebrity guests, unfortunately, do bring him gifts. Before we talk to him, though, I am thrilled to announce that the Gay Ass Sex Diaries are back with a vengeance. I initially intended on doing these interviews anonymously, but that slut Brian Moylan, the Bravo recap New York Times bestselling queen, refused. Did not want his voice to be changed. So this interview is all out in the open, baby. He discusses fucking a flight attendant, a priest, an ass-up businessman, and naturally, he also discusses butt chlamydia. You'll hear a preview clip after Bridger's interview, but check out the full thing on the Patreon. That is at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And I'm thrilled to have had so many of you join in this past week, and I'm excited to welcome even more of you sluts. But we're going to get into this episode with Bridger Weiniger. In honor of last week's episode with Parvati, we discuss if Bridger would be a faithful or a traitor, coming out at 30, and because Bridger is an ex-Mormon, I had to ask, what is your favorite curse word? Enjoy, fagotrinis. Bridger, there's so much to discuss for this app. I've come prepared with questions. I hope that doesn't intimidate you.
Oh my God. I mean, I've come as prepared as I possibly can.
Oh, you douched?
I'm completely.
From top to tails, hun. Not an ounce of food in that bod. Okay, perfect.
I haven't eaten in weeks.
Yeah, good. I want you to have a clear airway here because my first question... in addition to congratulating you on I Said No Gifts, which is such a great, great show, you have been on other podcasts I also listen to, including Nicole Byer's podcast, where you talk about something that I really identify with, which is, say it with me, panicking about money. Now, I truly feel a kindredness with you because even though the world isn't ending around us, we feel like it is.
Oh, it is kind of. I mean, I don't have a conversation with anyone at this point within city limits that's not like, oh, it's just bad and it's now going to be bad forever. It's worse somehow than it was last year.
I do think that's true. I just think for me, it's always been bad, no matter what the external conditions are. No matter if like the economy has never been better, I will still be nervous to buy blueberries. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, of course. I know that. I mean, that's been since at least second grade for me. It's just been saving, just because I have no idea of what's going to happen in 10 minutes.
And I'm with you, but I'm going to ask you a tough question. So let's say tomorrow you come into a huge sum of money What is the dumbest thing that you will buy first without an ounce of guilt? For me, it's a $20 smoothie. For you?
I was just talking to somebody about this, and it's a larger doormat. I'm not kidding.
Just a doormat, a larger doormat. Is your doormat giving teeny?
It's too small. I bought, of course, because it was like the more affordable option. And now for like at least 2 years, I've been just circling in my mind, probably once a week, I need to replace that. But I have a doormat that essentially works. So it's hard for me to justify buying anything else.
Trust me, if it ain't broke is the adage that we are unfortunately bound to. But I will tell you this, even though it won't change your thinking, Bridget, you deserve a bigger doormat.
I would argue against that. I think I have the doormat I deserve.
We accept the doormats we think we deserve. Yes. You've also discussed on your podcast with Brian Safi, one of Gay Ass Podcast's dear friends, about being on The Traitors. In fact, Brian Safi pitches you as a perfect cast member. Bridger Weiniger, do you want to be traitor or faithful?
Oh, I'd certainly want to be a traitor. I think I would be very good at it. I mean, of course, anyone watching is like, oh, I could do this. But the moral hangups people get on the show, I'm like, what are we talking about? That's exactly what the point of this is. Like, you're supposed to lie and deceive. They're like, I can't believe I'm lying to this person. It's like, then why are you there in the first place? I would be lying from the moment I walked in.
I think people are almost afraid of being such good liars that people conflate that performance with how they are in real life. Like, do you think people would be like, Bridger is too good at lying to me?
I would be so proud to hear that. I would be thrilled to hear people be like, Bridger's a liar and he's a good one.
Are you good at lying?
Not in normal situations. Not in like, not when I'm supposed to be honest. But if you put me in the castle... I can flip that switch, I think. I mean,
honey, she's
again,
a performer.
Absolute performer.
Do you prefer to do The Traitors with Alan Cumming as your host, or are we going down under?
Interesting. I cannot stand the Australian host. Who is that man? Where do they find him? I hope he's not a listener of the pod.
Actually,
I find him
he's
so
our producer.
Irritating.
Come on in, Brad, whatever the fuck his name is. No, I don't disagree. I do think that the toss-up is between Alan Cumming and the British host. Do you watch the...
I haven't watched British yet. I was told to watch Australian after American.
Oh, okay. British host is excellent. She is excellent. Because Alan, of course, brings the looks and the Shakespearean performance monologuing. But this, the UK host, she... brings the stakes of these people need to win this money, even though we all know that countdown clock is not real. I mean,
countdown clock?
You know, in the final challenges where they have to they have to race to, and then like you're watching this as they have 2 minutes left, but they have to, like, four of them have to get down the mountain, and you're like,
it's been 9 hours.
Yeah, like
you know, they're out there for
dark
days
outside. Yeah. Yeah. And Alan Cumming's like, you've got to hurry. Meanwhile, the British host is actually like screaming at them like as if it is life or death. And I like that commitment to the bit.
What's the British host's name?
Oh, sweetie, could not tell you a single vowel. I could picture her stunning black makeup around her eyes. I can
picture her.
I mean, she's good. She's good TV. Good host.
See, the Australian host does not bring any level of theatrics or drama. It's pure game show. It's like detergent commercial. The whole thing. And as much as I loved watching the game of the Australian one, even the place where they're living looks like a community center. Like, there's no romance whatsoever. And look, I've absolutely ruined the American version by looking up like what the production actually entails and where they're living, which is such a drag.
Famously, by the time this comes out, it'll be the week after. So let me say it as if it was just happened. I just interviewed Parvati from The Traitors Survivor. And I did ask her about the living conditions, but what devastated you the most?
Am I just such a rube? Like, I've been living in Los Angeles for 13 years and I still just believe whatever's presented. I thought that they were living in the castle. I absolutely thought these people, I'm being told they live in the castle. They must live in the castle. They live in an airport or like hotel out by the airport.
No, that was tough. That was a tough day for me too. Tough day for me.
Why can't they live in the castle?
Oh, I would love to. I would honestly, you know, one day there's going to be a Universal Studios-esque tour of that fucking castle. You know, they're going to be like,
oh,
this is where craft service. This is where they would take their smoke breaks. Like, we're going to be flying to Scotland to be doing the Traders Universal experience, the immersive
100%.
Experience.
100%. Yeah, I mean, if we can get people to live on the beach in Survivor, why can't we get them to live in a building that's meant to be lived in?
We don't ask much. We really don't. But I do ask a lot, Bridger, which is why I'm asking you the famous podcast question. Take a deep breath. As you tell me, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I have so many people to thank. I've been thinking about this question a lot. There's so many things, and they're like, there's kind of a period around between like 1995 and 1997 where there are like two musical moments. There's one person/TV moment. The two songs, the first was Love Fool by the Cardigans, and the second is Together Again by Janet Jackson.
I'm not joking. Janet has come up a lot recently, and I think that it makes sense, but there's something happening with the astrological positioning of the stars. Like, why am I keep coming up against people with Janet Jax?
The world's craving more Janet. Well, where has she gone? I mean, I don't think that we're ever going to get a full version back, but the Janet Jackson of it was, I have a very clear memory. I was watching Oprah, and this must have been like late elementary school, and usually like we didn't watch Oprah at my house. We didn't really watch like daytime TV, and I have three siblings, so I never got to, you know, you never really got to pick what was on TV. So I must have been home alone or something, and Janet, I think it must have been the beginning of the Velvet Rope promo tour, and she performed Together Again, like with backup dancers, and just absolute euphoria. I mean, to the point that I was like, after watching, I went out onto our front porch and jumped off and tried to do like a toe touch. But this was one of those small little peeks into what I couldn't even conceptualize as being gay. And it was so away from everyone that it sticks out.
Okay, I don't know what's going on with my Lexapro dosage or what, but that makes me get teary thinking about you jumping outside and replicating the toe touch, because what young gay person did not watch a perfect piece of culture and then try to do that themselves? Well, I'm not going to at all equate this to Janet Jackson, but after I saw the film Bring It On, my living room was covered in scuff marks from me trying to do every single cheer choreography. So picturing you having the rare moment of bliss that you can control the remote control and then put on Oprah and then watch Shanna, and then do you think that your toe touch was successful? Are you a limber girl?
I think I probably was. I think I have. I there was a point when I could, you know, do a good high kick. That was probably the one toe touch I ever attempted, maybe on a trampoline, a neighbor's trampoline at some point, but that's the only one that sticks out. And in that kind of fantastical high I was in post Oprah, I feel like it was so cinematic, I had to be full, a perfect toe touch.
It was sheer adrenaline, just sheer adrenaline. I do want to paint a bigger picture of the three siblings of it all, because some of our listeners definitely know, but some might not know, that you grew up in Utah, famously grew up Mormon. But I don't know, while gender is a construct, can you tell us what your siblings are?
Yes, I have two older brothers and a younger sister.
Interesting. Okay, so I'm also one of four, two brothers. Sorry, I was going to say two brothers and another brother. I have three brothers. But so you actually have the rare gift of the older brothers with the gift of some female energy younger than you. That must have been, I love my younger brother, but that must have been pretty incredible.
Oh, the guidance and the energy I was receiving from my younger sister just on an educational level. She taught me how to tie my shoes. My younger sister, I mean, and that speaks to maybe just
how much younger is she than you? Yeah.
She's two years younger than me. That's okay. But that's too much younger to be teaching an older sibling how to tie their shoes.
I mean, any younger sibling teaching the older to tie their shoes is tough, but at least it's 2 years and not five, you know? It's not like
I had just turned 20 and my 10-year-old sister.
I'd only worn loafers up until then. is your younger sister, did you tell her that you were gay before your older brothers found out?
Oh, of course.
Yay.
Of course. She was second in the second person I told. I told a coworker, and this was, you know, I was 30. So I told a coworker, and then it must have been I think I went home like a couple months after that, and my sister was the next person to know.
Wow. I know that you have said you kind of came out to yourself when you were like 26, 27. So it took you those next years to be like, gird your loins. Can you tell me like what, and maybe I assume most people listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast are somewhat out, but maybe I'm sure there's a bunch who are on that journey of the 26 to 30 you were in. Can you paint that picture of what got you from point A to telling the coworker and then your sis?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, at 26, I believe it must have been 26, I dated a woman for the first time for like, I think it was probably 2 or 3 months. And of course, the entire experience was not good. I mean, like we got along, but sexually, it was just obviously not the perfect fit. And so like, once I shut that down, there was a long period of doing nothing again, like seeing nobody, just being like, I gave it a shot. I guess this is just a life of loneliness for me. Just not going to see anyone again. Then and I kind of swore I would never date another woman. And then another woman kind of came into my life and was pretty insistent, like to a point that like it was at least easy for me to go along on the ride, where I was like, okay, yeah. Well, I guess I'm getting one more shot at this. But once I was into it, and it was very casual, but it was like, okay, oh yeah, we're not doing this again. So it wrapped that up, and then it was again a long period of time, months or years. My sister moved to San Diego with her husband. They moved from Utah, and I would go visit there pretty frequently. And so I would go see them, blah, blah, blah. And eventually I had Tinder on my phone for women, and again, didn't go on a single date with a woman via Tinder. But I was in San Diego, and I was like, well, this is location-based. No one in LA is going to see my face on here. My sister and her husband had gone to bed. I was like, let's just take a look. And that just kind of distinguished a little bit of the fear for me, where I was like, oh yeah, everything's still fine. The world's totally normal. And now I'm at least looking at romantic prospects that seem realistic.
Yeah.
But I wonder, I'm not quite sure what the time, I must have gone back to LA and been like, okay, let's start giving this a shot. And started going out with guys, and then like had some, you know, dating's a nightmare, absolute hell. And
Get like a euphoric first kiss, or not even, doesn't have to be the first, but did you end up having a kiss that felt like the kiss you have been trying to have for years?
None of them were like, oh my God. I mean, like, of course it was like, oh yeah, this feels good, unlike kissing a woman feels good. But like, none of them really did much romantically for me, where I was like, oh wow, I finally solved it, until I met my current boyfriend. And that was like the first time where I was like, oh my God, like this is what I need, and this is what like I've got to keep around. And like, and so that was like, because I really was literally out to nobody. And so he was the first time where I was like, oh, this feels like solid ground I'm finally on, that like doesn't feel like I'm introducing this random kind of weird element to my life. This is a person that I actually think I can care about. And so then that was how it started to unfold. And I like told my coworker. She said she knew, but I don't know if she knew.
It's a
rough one. Yeah, that's like, nobody ever quite knows.
Well, no one wins also when they say I knew, because it's a little like, well, I Anyone could say that about anything. I could say right. that I knew that Janet Jackson's nipples would pop out of the Super Bowl. And as Sheree of the Traitors says, who gonna check me, boo? Well, it's also like good. I'm sure your coworker was lovely because you felt comfortable to come out to them, but.
Right. I mean, it's like, and it was like kind of an, I know. But again, I was like, well, I want to see documentation of you cracking this. Not that I really cared, but it was like, it was whatever. But it was wonderful. She was very supportive. And then we kind of started the months long journey out completely. And I think it was the end of that year that I finally came out to my parents.
Wow. Wow. When your sister met your boyfriend for the first time, was that anything special or emotional?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But it was also so fraught, and I was so nervous about it. And she was, at the time, slowly beginning to remove herself from the Mormon church. And, like, Mormonism really teaches you that if you leave it, like, your life is just going to be this mess, this horrible thing, you know, that's...
Right.
Whatever. And so she came out and we went out to dinner or something and things were going lovely. And Jim was driving and he's the most aggressive driver in the world. He's from New Jersey and is just this loud, obnoxious Italian person. And I think someone must have cut him off and he was just like, fuck you, you piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, my sister's hearing this. She's like, what is my life? And my sister's much cooler than I am and was totally fine with it. But it was one of those things where it's like, Jim, you're just meeting this person. What are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
So we like patched it up, but there's this photo of us at the observatory where it's like, these two men hate each other. It was like shortly after this, we fought about it. And it was just like, we're standing right next to each other. My sister's there, I'm sure felt the tension.
You and your boyfriend, Jim.
Yes, like because we were taking my sister to the various sites and we had to act like everything was normal. And I was so mad at him. I was like, she's just leaving the church.
Oh, my God.
Can we just make this seem normal?
It's such a hilarious crossover because I had a nightmare with my boyfriend at the time when I met his sister. So it's almost like I guess I was the gym, but I wasn't driving, which would have been definitely a fight for us. But I think sometimes when you meet the family or the boyfriend meets the family, sometimes it's actually good for their true personalities to show that leads to a fight because at least you're kind of priming the parties to know what the truth of the person is. And the reason I say that is because the long story short is that when I met my now sister-in-law for the first time, we were at a group dinner and one of our friends, who she knows she's done this and we joke about it, so I can drag her on a recorded podcast, but I had a couple of margaritas and I was feeling loosey-goosey, dropping a punchline or two. And let me just say, Bridger, as someone who is a writer and as we are both comedy girls, they were landing and the jokes were not bad. I'm just going to preface. if I'm bombing, I will tell you. But in this setting, group dinner, landing. However, the friend of my husband's said to me once the table quieted down, you know what, Eric? You're not as funny as you think you are.
Oh, what?
And so I was, of course, like devastated, pissed, all of it. And I wanted Matt to kind of like stand up for me, or I don't even know what I wanted, him to comfort me, whatever I wanted. I clearly was like trying to get him to cure my inner turmoil. And because his sister was there, he was just like, let's just like enjoy the night. But I just pouted the rest of the night. And then we went to like a rooftop bar in New York and I was angry the whole time. It's just like, it's so funny, the meeting of the families. It brings
well, they're so high stakes and
high
everyone's
stakes.
Nervous and your situation, I mean, you had absolutely every right to, that's wild behavior to tell somebody that, especially
Isn't
somebody
it?
In a nice setting.
I know. We were at this Mexican restaurant on like 15th Street and 9th Avenue. I'm having a gorgeous time meeting my boyfriend's sister. She's so nice. We're having so much fun. You're not as funny as you think you are. Like, truly, can you, like, one of the meanest things you can say to someone
that
who, is, like...
That's like saying you're ugly.
Right.
It's just one of those really rough things. It's like, you're stupid. Yeah.
You're not as smart as you think you are. What? Like, yeah, replace any other adjective. They're all terrible. But I assume that you and Jim patched up the fight and Jim and your
yes.
sister got along famously.
Oh, they love each other. And everybody, I mean, that's the nice thing about having Jim around in general, is he's just somebody that in 99% of all circumstances, he is exactly the same person, regardless of who's around or whatever. He doesn't, I mean, sometimes to a fault, but like, you get the same person at all times, and it's kind of this loud, fun to be around person. Yeah, those two, my family. I mean, he was so easy outside of that to introduce to my family. Like, he just wins people over.
Well, I kind of love to hear this person who came out, you know, later in your 20s as a 30-year-old man, sort of like coming to terms with being queer. And also, you left the Mormon church. And there's like a lot of cultural changes here. But then to find you paired up with a loud, I almost said a loud Italian. Is he Italian? Did I make that up?
Oh, yes. Italian-Polish, but leans Italian. He's basically his Italian mother.
Italian-leaning. Okay, so you're now with this New Jersey Italian mother. Like, I love how I'm with a Georgia Catholic, so I'm loud Jew. It's like, I love seeing the, we find the people who sometimes are the people we either would like to be or don't have that, the qualities that they
possess. Of course. I mean, the qualities that he has are just things I simply would never be able to attain. Like, I mean, we're very much truly opposite people. Like, yeah. In so many ways.
How long have you two been together?
Oh, no. Let's see. 9 years.
Why is that a no? Did I trigger you?
I was like, it's 9 years, but I just wanted to quickly do the math just to be sure. You never know.
Oh my God. Well, mazel on nine. I mean, come on. Straight out the gate, you and Jim are killing it.
We're doing an okay job. I mean, we're currently spending a lot of time apart. He lives in New York.
Oh my God.
He's been living there since October. He's coming back next month, so.
Okay, well, congrats then on the last month of the cross cunch. And that reunion, I hope you have cameras in your home so I can jerk off to it. I'm kidding. Okay, so I do want to ask you another question that pulls from the amazing I Said No Gifts podcast. You interviewed and received a Vulture article over your interview with Emma Thompson. Emma Thompson is someone that I would say made me gay. I would say her portrayal in Love Actually as Alan Rickman's devastated wife. She's listening to Joni Mitchell. I was probably, you know, a teenager watching that being like, I understand how she feels. Why would I? But just like the sheer sadness I identify with. But the question I want to ask you is, she gave you a gift of her version of crack cocaine, which is chocolate-covered marshmallow treats from Scotland. They're called Tonics Snowballs. That was my Scottish. And before we get into what your experience was interviewing her, my question for you, Bridger, is if Emma Thompson loves a marshmallow treat for her crack cocaine, what is your version of crack cocaine?
For me, if it's something that I just simply cannot stop eating or stop doing, I mean, it is cookies. I know that very well because every night I eat one cookie, and it's because I prepare one cookie. I bake it because if I were to bake more, I would eat every one of them. So it's like this. I mean, this was like a thing that was really filling as hole for me when I was closeted, which I was like eating 9 cookies a night. It was just, it must have been devastating on my health in general. So that was something I was able to kind of recognize. And now each night I make a cookie, and I can't eat more cookies because then I would have to reheat the oven.
Oh my God, I'm having so many thoughts. First thought is he a serial killer? Second thought
I know,
is,
it's a really scary kind of thing to do.
But it's also so nice. It's so nice, and also the kind of beautiful symbolism of you having 9 cookies a night as a closet case. Now, like, you're, you know, getting the dick that you deserve. You lessen the cookie, and it's now one cocky. But I do want to get into the weeds, because I am a dessert girl myself. Are we going homemade? Are we going Toll House?
Homemade. Mm. Never a refrigerated cookie dough.
Are you meal prepping this?
Yeah, I'm essentially meal prepping. I almost took a picture of it last night. I made new dough, and I've got like a week's worth of dough in my fridge right now.
And is it
chocolate chip? Something I should have never revealed to anyone, and I tell people constantly.
I'm thrilled you do because it. I'm thrilled you did because it's such a great insight into your life.
That is kind of the only meal prep I do, because I don't cook. Yeah, eat out almost every single night, and so my meal prep is just making like a full recipe of cookie dough, essentially once a week.
Is it a proprietary recipe that you're not going to reveal?
It is. It's the one that I've been making lately has been, you know, like you use all sorts of different recipes and like find out things you like about them. And this is kind of a mix of a few different recipes. And I'm still toying with it. Last night I used a different proportion of flour. It's like a fun little puzzle you're doing, and you keep track of it and see how it affects the dough, that kind of thing.
Oh. I love that. Well, I do mean this, that we both live in Los Angeles. We often have parties, and I will make a chocolate chip cookie recipe myself, but always encourage other cookies to be brought. And I'm going to, at gunpoint, ask you to come to one of our parties.
Please. What's the recipe you're using?
New York Times chocolate chip.
Oh, that's a good recipe.
Oh, it's so... And shout out to Alex Siegel, straight man who does not listen to this podcast, but is a dear friend of mine. And he got me on, he makes them whenever I hang out with him, and they're just pitch perfect. Really.
Oh,
good.
Somebody who really knows how to make a cookie. It's my favorite thing.
Oh, yeah. And sounds like Bridger Weiniger is one of those people. The other thing that you're really good at is, I'm trying to decide if that's an actual segue. The other thing you're really good at is having your podcast be in really cool places. Bridger, question. You were not only an answer in the New York Times crossword puzzle, speaking of New York Times, but you were also on a billboard in Times Square. Bridger, what was more effective in solving your daddy issues?
Well, first I want to back up because I wasn't... The podcast was a clue, and the answer was because the podcast... The theme song is by the incredible Amy Mann, who's probably also responsible for a lot of our gayness. But her name was the answer, and I just try to give her as much credit as possible for everything because what an incredible human being. But I think it was the Times Square. Let's be honest.
Huge. Did you treat people differently when you found out you were better than them?
Of course. Why else? I mean, why be better than someone if you're not going to treat them poorly?
And that's what I've been saying for years and years and years.
I tell people.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you.
Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's so interesting to talk to you because I feel like we have a similar vibe in terms of anxiety, but also working our tushies off with podcasting and the comedy of it all. What is your relationship to being present and being proud of yourself? Do you ever actually allow yourself to feel good, or is it constantly trying to reach the next level of proving yourself that you're not a failure?
The latter, for sure. I mean, there are like rare moments where I'm like, where I can be like, oh, I'm good at this about all kinds of topics. The only time where I'm like, oh, I'm good at comedy or whatever is if I'm reading something that's being produced that's horrifically terrible, where I'm just like, I know objectively I could do something better than this. Those are, that's kind of the, or if I meet somebody I hate who's succeeding more than I am.
Sure.
And then it's like, I mean, there are very few people that I think are just so unbelievably good that you can't even be jealous of them. But there are, then we know countless people who are like, oh, you're terrible. What you do is terrible. And what's, it's probably because you're a snake that you're succeeding.
Or just so delusionally confident that they convince other people. That to me is, and honestly, one of the things that has helped me get out of my imposter syndrome that I still deal with every single day is knowing that sometimes the battle is just pretending that you think highly of yourself, and then like, and then trying to project that confidence out with your work. Because like, at a certain point, there are people making things that you don't, that you're not, that we're not into, but like the reason why they made it is because they thought they should.
Right. But see, that little trick of like pretending, I tend to outgame myself in that sort of situation where it's just like I keep stepping out one layer and I'm like, well, now I'm pretending and now this is making it worse. And it's hard to, confidence, even faking it for me is very, very difficult.
Where do you think the that comes from for you specifically, the either overthinking or the not being able to sort of be present in like, I'm doing okay now?
I mean, as far as being as confident in expressing myself, I think it's largely coming from the way we were raised and like the house I was raised in, which was silent. And like we'd sit around the dinner table, it would be silent. You really didn't say anything unless you needed to say it. I love my parents or whatever, but like, it felt like you were constantly kind of walking on eggshells in my house in certain ways. So it was like, I think that that's just stuck around with me. So when I'm around other people, I'm just constantly, the editing is happening just at 1,000 miles an hour. And then when I realize I should have said something, that I'm beating myself up about it. And it's just like this kind of, it's very rare that I'm able to get out of my own way in that sort of situation. And then it feels great, but it's like, I don't know, it's a trap.
That makes total sense to me. And while I know this won't actually, you know, because I have a similar thought pattern in my head, this might not land, but I do want to communicate to you that it's pretty fucking amazing that you have gone from that environment to seemingly being very comfortable with your feelings and communicating your emotions, and also just like the difficulties of coming out. It's not an easy thing to do, especially when you're on a literal recorded podcast. And so,
but I think that's part of what helps for me. I feel like I'm always waiting for permission to do the thing. And I feel like, oh, I'm on a podcast. I've been given permission to do this thing.
Yeah.
Which is express my feelings or try to be funny or whatever. And so it's like, no one can get mad at me right now.
Yeah. And, oh, wow.
Which is, so it is kind of weird when I'm in other situations where I'm like, well, I'm waiting for permission and no one's ever going to give me permission.
I get that. I think it's from my side of things, it's less of the permission and more of the deep dread of not getting an A+ on the report card.
Of course.
I mean, our report cards were shown at family gatherings to like, look. And then if you got a B, it was like really tough. It was like, yeah, what happened? What happened to get that? And you're like, and at the time you're like, what did happen? That's awful. And then as an adult, if I do anything that I think could be an A- or a B+, I would feel like the world was ending.
Of course, completely. And yeah, I think I just come from like a slightly different angle of that, of being like, I have to get an A so someone will be happy, be like, oh, he can do something, that kind of thing, which is a rough thing to say. But, and God bless my parents and everybody. But like, I think that was a lot of where I was like, my brothers are very much boys and they do, they're capable of doing things that my dad likes to do and this sort of thing. And I was like, I don't really have any. So I'm like, well, I can read and I can write. And so I can. I can maybe at least get good grades in school.
You can throw a ball and I can read The Bridge to Terabithia. I very much identify with a lot of what you're saying, but I do need to ask you the next famous podcast question. Bridger Weiniger, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Oh, this is very... I mean, this is another thing that is so incredibly difficult for me to... like, I have a list, but I think like the natural gut reaction is Parker Posey. Which, and she... And then like you start asking, like, what is a character actress? And but I think... For me, anytime Parker Posey is in anything, regardless of the quality of the rest of the project, I know I'm going to be so fixated and fascinated by what she's doing.
It's so true. No matter what the director has Parker Posey do on that cam, she will take it and run with it. It's like, I do think that she has had star turn moments, but don't you think after just watching the Oscars, like, she deserves to be center stage?
Oh, certainly.
Giving us, it's probably going to be what, best supporting actress, just because she, I mean, she could be lead, but I feel like her Oscar is going to come from a supporting role that we can't not give it to her.
But that, like, even trying to imagine her accepting an Oscar, I can't do it. I feel like she doesn't care. I feel like it would be weird to see her kind of earnestly thanking people. Or
that's
like
true.
Talking about how important, like, it, I mean, maybe she cares, but to me, it just seems like she's so above that. It would be like Parker Posey couldn't be here tonight for accepting it.
She's too busy dealing with her peacock feathers. there's not compare despair, but this is a positive comparison. I feel like another person who is just too cool to be given an Oscar is Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
You know,
there are certain people where you're just like, I can't imagine them walking down the aisle smiling and being like, acting like it matters.
It is very talk about like on The Traitors, you have to perform and be a huge liar. I feel like the whole entire Oscar thing is, not to be too controversial, but it's almost like a wedding. Of course, your wedding, you are happy, but it's all a performance.
Completely. Anybody that isn't performing is out of their mind. They're like, oh, wait, so you just buy into all of, like, how much, like, what goes wrong in your brain that you think that any of that means or is real? I mean, this is not new, but it's like, I guess there are probably people in that audience where it's just like, this is reality for them. That is the thing they've always wanted. It means like life or death to them. And I just can't get into that mindset.
Did you, as a young Mormon, have access to the Christopher Guest films? Were you watching Waiting for Guffman as a child?
Not as a child. I think like the first time I watched it was, I was probably a junior in high school, maybe. And it was just like kind of a perfect time to see that movie. And of course, it's like, I watch it at least once a year. I just got to see it in a theater. And she is such a star. Fred Willard, such, I mean, everybody is so good.
Wait, where did you see it in theaters? I'm devastated.
At Vidiot's.
Oh, shit. I devastated I wasn't there.
It was an interesting experience because, you know, it's not like a huge comedy. You know, it's like got a lot of what's happening is very small or quiet. And so to see it with an audience, I imagine at least a decent amount had never seen it before. Like, it wasn't like as uproarious as you would imagine.
It's not
really a movie theater movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can't even imagine because I've watched it so many times, but with maybe a couple other people tops. It's
right.
It's a personal film, I'd say. Corky St. Clair.
Corky St. Clair, Ron Albertson. I mean, the names are all so good. Like, the deleted scenes are so good. Have you seen her monologue? I mean, like, Everybody.
Well, isn't there like also like the audition sequence in the classroom? They have like a full extended version of Parker Posey's Teacher's Pet.
But she also, wait, she does Teacher's Pet in the movie, right? And the deleted scene is when she does the monologue, which she wrote about who's on top and who's on bottom now. which is, it's crazy. Like every deleted scene could just be another in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's all so fucking good. Since unfortunately we're getting towards the end of this interview, but we still have a couple things to talk about. One is on your Instagram, you post a lot of photos of trash. Are you okay?
I'm better than ever. Okay. I started doing that 10 years ago and just never stopped. And it was probably not like a good move on my part. It's not really how you build an Instagram following. But it's like less and less that I want to do it. But when I do it, I still have a good time.
Oh, yeah.
And people will send me a picture of trash and be like, thinking of you.
Listen, a brand is a brand is a brand. And also, social media is so toxic that why not get some joy out of posting a pile of trash? Is your social media habits, now that you're this like in a 9-year relation, you're an out proud gay man, do we thirst follow on the internet, or are we getting our thirst from elsewhere?
Elsewhere. On the internet, not at all.
Are you still a magazine girl?
It's completely a magazine. No, I mean, just social media for me is just like, and I'm like getting a little bit more like integrating my personal taste and things into it, but it's just, I try to get on it, share and look at what I want, and then just hop off. And like, I still am a fairly private person and just don't really, I don't know.
Oh, I noticed this about your social media presence, and I'm jealous and so respectful of like, your podcast has such great content. You know, you put up funny things, but it's not like, you know, I can feel your really healthy boundary of putting out positivity into the world and letting it be known as you need to on social media, and then getting the brunch out. Because I think sometimes I feel a little bit like a beholden to my phone.
I mean, of course, no one can blame you for that. I mean, and I'm not innocent of it at all. I just, for whatever reason. Maybe it's bad. Maybe I'm on the opposite end of it. Maybe I should be sharing more. I don't know.
No. I mean, it's all bad, Bridger. It's all so bad. But,
it's truly as bad as it could be.
So bad. Do you, now as an adult hosting this podcast, but also as someone who has siblings that are very different from you, as I do, what is the adult relationship like with your life back in Utah versus your LA gayness? Do you find yourself compartmentalizing when you go back home, or what's that relationship like?
I feel like it's as smooth as it can be. Like when I'm back home, I mean, like the only thing that I'm really controlling is my language, because Mormons don't swear. And so like, just out of respect for my parents, that, which is such an easy switch to flip on and off. But otherwise, like, I mean, I guess I don't really talk about gay things with my parents. It's, they're so unbelievably supportive and wonderful. But it's like, I don't know how comfortable they are if I bring it up.
Yeah. No, I get that. It's such an interesting balance that we have to make with being authentic to ourselves, but also, you know, not going out of our way to make people, for a point to make people uncomfortable. I definitely am guilty of sometimes rebelling and saying something to get a bit of a rise. But that's more me. With the cursing of it all, what's your favorite curse word?
Oh, probably goddamn it.
So satisfying.
It's a really solid just, and it can work in so many different tones and emotions, and it can be a really angry word, which is like, you rarely hear somebody use it in anger, but it's so fun when you do.
Ooh. Since you are a performer, can I give you a scenario, and then you have to say "God damn it" in the way that you would say it?
I would love to give this a shot.
Okay. Bridger Weiniger,
you never buy new shoes because you have shoes that already fit and work and look fine. But you were given a pair of shoes that were white from a work thing you did, and you decided to wear your new white shoes out, and they looked really cute on you. But you step out of your car, and it goes straight into the most shit-filled puddle pool you've ever seen. And you're by yourself. There's no one on the street. You're allowed to be as loud as you want. The foot hits the puddle, and you say,
"Oh, God damn it.
That was kind of hot. Am I allowed to say that? God damn it. Okay, now you give me a scenario.
Okay, Eric, you're at home. You're getting ready to go. You've dressed up. You're ready to go out night on the town. You get to the front door, and it's stuck. You can't open it. You're running very late.
My front door, I just can't get out of the apartment?
You're now stuck in your apartment.
Okay. I'm going to have to be a little physical with it because I'm going to try to get out.
Oh, God damn it!
Let me do it again. God damn it.
God damn
it. Wait, let me do it again. I need, see, this is why I need a lot of takes. I'm not a one-take wonder. Damn it. Thank you.
I love, and I love a clenched teeth, goddammit, as well. God damn it!
Oh, that's good. Through the teeth. The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue. Bridger, what a stunning conversation. I'm going to ask you a final question. I did not prep you on to round us out before you plug the trash social media. Bridger... If the Cardigans and Janet Jackson made you gay, what is keeping you gay today? Is it a pornography? Is it a TV she, a character actree, or a cookie?
Oh, okay. Let me... That's a great question. I want to have the right answer for this. I would say sheer resentment. That'll keep me in it for decades.
Oh, I love that. The resentment of truly anything and everything keeping you gay as hell. Bridger, thank you for coming on. That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
Tell us
where can we find you, and what's the name of that podcast again that you host so beautifully?
The podcast is called I Said No Gifts. The Instagram is it, I Said No Gifts, or if you want to look at trash, and I promise it's not gross trash because I know people eat breakfast looking at Instagram, it's just my name, Bridger Weiniger.
Bridger, stay gay, stay resentful, and I'll see you at the next cookie party.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Ass Interview with Bridger Weiniger. And if you want to hear Brian Moylan's Gay Ass Sex Diary, enjoy this clip. For the full thing, go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast. Now tell me, before I reveal your name, are you a slut?
I am a slut and a proud member of the slut community, yes.
You are such a proud slut that you have volunteered to not go anonymous in this Gay Ass Sex Diary. Historically speaking, we do this with a voice changer, but you are a loud and proud slut. Brian Moylan, welcome to Gay Ass Sex.
Oh,
tell
my God.
Girls,
thank
how did you get
you.
So how'd you get so shameless? How are you such a shameless slut queen?
I mean, I just have always been proud of my sluttiness. And I remember when Sex and the City was still on, they did a thing in W Magazine where they asked all these people who were heads of fashion brands if they would actually hire Samantha Jones to do their PR. And
Samantha.
And Christian Louboutin said, "Well, we don't really have outside PR, but I love sluts." And I was like, "Me too." And so since then, I've always had like a love of sluts.
Well, you and Christian Louboutin are both walking holes, and I'm here to get into the whole story. Brian, we have so much to deep dive into. So speaking of being a proud slut, you told me off mic about a recent diagnosis you had. Brian, what was the medical condition called?
It was called, well, in my household, we call it butt clam, which means anal chlamydia. So got that old butt clam again. And yeah, and it was just asymptomatic, you know. The sexual health service, I live in London, the sexual health services here in London are excellent. There's a clinic, you go, they give you your prep for free. They just give you like three bottles. Like, it's fantastic. And so I went for my screening, my every 3 month screening, and turns up a positive on the butt clam. So I just showed back up. They gave me some antibiotics. And but I will say, you know, I love the prep revolution and how slutty we are now and how everyone's just fucking and no one's using condoms and whatever. But for the first many years of my slutdom, I was a condoms only girl and I never got nothing. So, yeah. You know, yeah. It's a brave new world.
Well, maybe a cautionary tale about the condomless
but
sex.
The one STI I got, like pre-prep, I got in my throat from giving a blowjob without a condom. So
is it the G word? Is it the gonorrhea?
It was the gonorrhea. Yeah. And well, and I got it in the wiener too. It was me and this really hot Brazilian guy in Fire Island and we slapped BJs and it gave me gonorrhea. And so I had to go to the clinic on Fire Island. Girl, they treat you right.
I was going to say, that is not their first case of Brazilian gonorrhea at the Fire Island clinic, honey.
Well, no, so there's a little clinic on Fire Island and it's open from like 11 to noon or something like that. And you can go if you have an emergency, but you go and there's a line and it's just everybody with symptoms and they're like, we're not going to test for which one it is. We're just going to treat you for all of them. And so they give you pills, they give you a shot like send you on your way. And it's suggested donation. So it's free.
Well, and you know, those Fire Island queens have money. So the clinic is thriving. They're just, it's lovely to see in these gay environments, such as Fire Island or the town of London, that there are places that we can treat the infections we get from our slaughtery. And speaking of the slaughtery, Brian, the first question I'm going to ask you is, a lot of times our listeners want to know our circumstances in terms of relation or otherwise. Tell us, are you in a relationship? Are you single? Are you open? What is the story?
I am married to my husband. We've been together for 13 years. It will be in June.
Wow.
And yes. And we have an understanding in which we are allowed to participate outside of our connubial bed, as they might say.
Do they? Who says that?
I don't know who would say that. Maybe your Latin teacher. But
well, I will say from my perspective, you and your husband have a beautiful communication, a range, and it's always lovely to talk to a fellow married gay who we're exploring our sex shameless and our ability to be a loving partner while also enjoying the fruits of our gaber, if you will. Brian, my first actual slut question is, have you ever been ass up and someone walk in the room to your winking hole?
No, but I was mostly a top for most of my career. And so when I was younger, I was the twinkiest twink you ever saw in your life. I was, you know, 19. I looked like 15. No hair. I was super skinny. You could see all the ribs.
I'm nervous for the type of man that was into the 15 looking twink. Who was fucking you?
Well, I was into older gentlemen, but then the older gentlemen would always want to be like the top. And I am kind of a rebel and don't like to be told what to do. So then one year I said that I gave up being a bottom for Lent. And so I'd like hook up with these guys and they'd like try to fuck me. I'd be like, no, I'm a top. And then I would fuck them. And so I did a lot of, in my earlier years, gentlemen ass up waiting for me. But I was never the ass in the air. I was usually the dick that shows up.
You were the walking dick at 19 who was just plowing these businessmen in Midtown East.
No, I lived in DC at the time.
I'm so sorry. Foggy Bottom.
Yes. I had a few ass in the air regulars. One was a gentleman who was very wealthy. He had this huge apartment and, you know, you'd show up and he'd buzz you in and then you'd have to walk through all of these rooms to find the bedroom. And then he would be there, ass in the air. And yeah. And so I'd fuck him on the regular. And then there was a guy who lived down the street from my house. And I forget how we met. We met on one of the early internet, like Craigslist or gay.com or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he had my number and he used to text me and just say, come over. And I would go over and fuck him. And he was a flight attendant. So he's kind of in and out and he'd just be ass up and I'd go and fuck him. His name was Edwin, which was kind of strange. And anyway, he was really hot. And then I was looking for apartments. You know, I stopped hearing from him and then I was looking for apartments and I went and the apartment was his apartment. What? And I was like, what happened to the guy who lived here? And they said, oh, he died. And I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, and that was the end of that.
I'm sorry.
That story took a turn, didn't it?
Just like that flight attendant would take you all in ass up, I'm taking in that story. Well, can we have a moment of silence for Edwin, the flight attendant?
Oh my God. Edwin, the flight attendant, had such an excellent ass. Oh my God.
He was. Well, I hope he's sitting on cock on the other side. By the way, the flight attendant fantasy of it all is huge for me. I've never hooked up with a flight attendant, but there's something so sexy to me about knowing that they have been across the globe on a daily basis and then chose my pole. There's something so special about that. There's like, it's like a man in uniform, but the gay man in uniform, you know?
Absolutely. And you think about like how much good dick flight attendants must get and that it's like they're going and getting the best dick everywhere in the world.
If I was not like a comedian, performer, podcaster type, I would second be a therapist and then third be a flight attendant. If only for getting like fucking in Spain. Like that's, I think it would be worth it at least for a few years, you know?
Oh my God, for sure. My husband is very into planes and airports and traveling and flight attendant and all that stuff. And he has major flight attendant pilot kind of fantasies.
Pilot.
And he travels all the time. And recently, I'm telling one of his stories. He's probably going to get mad at me, but
I'm shutting that slut up so you can get the rest of the story behind the paywall. Go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast. It helps support the podcast and makes my dreams come true. I'll see you next week for another amazing guest on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Follow along at Gay Ass Podcast and let me know what you thought of this ep. You're the best. Stay gay ass.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.